Welcome, everybody, to episode number 21.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a show that celebrates the RV lifestyle. Whether you have a small RV like the road trek Jennifer and I travel in, or a big motor home, a fifth wheel, a pop-up, heck, even if you dry camp out of your car or tent and are just thinking about getting an RV, this is for you. We talk here about getting out there, enjoying God's creation, meeting interesting people, finding great campsites, exploring the countryside, and sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right and using the right gear and technology to enhance our camping and RV experience. That is what Road Trekking, the podcast, is all about, the RV lifestyle. Well, this episode of Road Trekking, the RV podcast, is brought to you by Van City RV, where they only sell Class B motorhomes, Camping World, the Good Sam Club, good friends, good fun, great savings, Audible.com, where you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial, and Verizon Wireless, the nation's largest 4G LTE network. Well, I have a lot on tap for us today. In fact, we're going to start with a ton of questions. We've had so many questions sent in on the link over on the right side of roadtrekking.com website. Over on the right-hand side there, it says leave a voicemail. And so we got a lot of listener questions. Everybody's home in many parts of the country, and it's cold, and they're thinking about RV, so all the questions have coming in. So we're going to do an extended Q&A today, and we have a great interview coming up with nice guy in the RV industry. His name is Greg Gerber. He runs RV Daily Report. He reports for the industry, but he's also become a full-timer. After years of reporting behind a desk about the RV industry, in the last year or so, he's bought himself an RV, and he's been traveling the country, and wait till you hear the difference between what it's like reporting it, you know, from a desk, and then actually being out there. Greg's a terrific guy. I want to thank him for featuring me on his recent podcast, and we'll have him on ours. What we've been trying to do is, from a couple of you listeners who said, well, you know, we really got hooked on podcast after listening to this one, so who else does road trekking type podcast? And so we're going to start with Greg today. Last week, you heard about a young couple that dumped a life in the cubicles and are traveling the country with their dog, and this week, it's Greg Gerber from RV Daily Report, a true industry leader who is also now a full-time RVer. And we've got John and Kathy Huggins coming up a little bit later on, and we got a couple that travels with their kids. So these are all different podcasts that you may want to add to your playlist, and you'll be able to sort of preview and listen to them and meet them here on the Road Trekking RV podcast over the next few weeks. So I'm all excited to bring our little cadre of RV podcasters. There's a whole bunch of us around the country that are doing this, and it will be kind of fun to have you meet them as well. So that's coming up a little bit later on. This we'll hear from Greg. We've got some great tech tips for you this week. We've got a bucket list destination. We got an off the beaten path report and all sorts of stuff. But let's start now with those questions.
Questions, you've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers.
One of our listener RV questions of the week.
We found your road trekking website back in the summer and been following your podcast ever since. We have been full-timing for about 25 years, or full-timing for about 8 years, full-time RVers for about 25 years since we started having kids. We started out in a Class B back when we first started RVing, and have had a Class A and a travel trailer. I currently live in a 38-foot travel trailer, but we're empty nesters and looking to downsize. And we're looking to go back into a Class B, preferably Road Trek. I've been pretty familiar with them since they really kicked up in the mid-90s. And but my question and comment is, I'd like to get a hold of Camp Skunk or somebody that's had some experience with both models. I've got cerebral palsy and walk on crutches, and I'm looking at a Chevrolet chassis because of the lower ground clearance versus a Sprinter chassis, and I I walk on crutches, drive with hand controls, and like I say, that's part of the reason that I want to go back into a Class B is for the ease of getting in and out of them. And I sure would appreciate it if you could maybe pass it along to Camp Skunk or anybody else that might have had some experience dealing with both chassis, or which one might have a lower entry step. Also, I'd like to say we've found your Super Healthy Me podcast when you first started that, and my wife, we've enjoyed that. She'd be all over me if I didn't mention that to you. We'd like to encourage you in that. We've been missing you on those podcasts. And I also would like to say that we appreciate the way that you openly share your faith and your relationship with the Lord. That's a real encouragement, and I appreciate your stand there. Thank you for your time, and you have a good day, sir.
Well, Jody, thank you so much for those kind words, and boy, it's pretty hard to travel this country without and see the beauty of this land and without understanding that this didn't just happen. This was just not just a sudden little evolution from the slime that created all this, that there's a much higher power that made this beautiful country, and it's God's land, man. It is beautiful out there. And thank you about the encouragement of the Super Healthy Me. I haven't talked about that here on Road Trekking, but I've done a couple other podcasts, and one of them I started really for myself because, and that's the Super Healthy Me, all one word, .com website and podcast. One of the things that the downsides for RVing for me has been, it's been harder to eat right and to exercise daily. And I found those pounds creeping on. And so we've had to do, you all know Jennifer is a fitness freak, and she's always always working out, but I was always blogging, you know, and so the pounds crept on. So I started that website just to sort of keep myself accountable. And I haven't done one in about 3 or 4 weeks. They're not as regular as this, but I got one coming up pretty soon, Jody. So we'll be doing another one. I'm glad you and your wife listened to those. That was I really appreciate that. And superhealthyme.com, if y'all want to go over and take a listen to that, and you can listen to my battle with the pounds. But I got to also tell you that they are really coming off. I'll talk more about that in a couple of weeks, but they are really coming off. I think I've turned the corner, and we figured out how to eat healthy in the road, and it's a daily battle for many of us, but I'm working on it. And thank you, Jody, for that. Now, as to your questions about the difference between the ground clearance on a Sprinter-based chassis or a Chevy-based chassis. I have only had the Sprinter, but as you said, Camp Skunk, our road trekking reporter, Camp Skunk, has indeed had both vehicles. He is now in a Sprinter, and so let's throw that question out to Camp
Skunk.
Well,
for Jody, I have Camp Skunk on the phone to answer the question directly, since Jody was right. Camp Skunk has had both the Chevy road trek and now a Sprinter-based road trek. So, Camp Skunk, where are you, by the way? You sound warm
right
and comfortable.
Now, I'm in the far northern reaches of Florida. It got down to 45 last night. That's how far north I am.
Well, yeah, warm. It's warmer than it is up where I am up in the Midwest there. Well, Jody asked a question based on your expertise as someone who has had both a Chevy chassis version of the road trek and now the Sprinter version. He needs some help with those hand crutches that he uses. What would you tell him is the best choice as he looks at getting downsizing from a Class A to a road trek?
Okay, well, the answer is a Sprinter chassis is going to have a better access and than a Chevy, and let me tell you why. The main thing for people with mobility problems that can't shimmy in and out of things is that the door width opening is better on the Sprinters. I have had an armoire where the third seat goes for both of my units, but even with the armoire, there's 27 inches side to side to get in the side door on the Sprinter, and it was more like 21 inches. In my Chevy, I would, if you do have mobility problems, I would recommend against getting an armoire. Get the seat. That will give you a little more room. But the other thing is that on a Sprinter with the electric step, there are three big wide steps. There's the electric step, and then there's the threshold, and then there's the actual floor level. On a Sprinter, all three steps are basically the length of your foot. on a Chevy, you will have about, you know, 4 or 5 inches, just enough to get your toes in on the first step. It's still 3 steps, but the first step is really short, and that may be a problem for people. If you're using arm crutches, then you don't really need to worry about the handholds, but for people who do need a handhold, the Sprinter handhold is a lot better. It's over on the right side of the door opening as you go in, and it's really easy to grab a hold and help yourself up if you use it.
Well, thank you for making yourself available for Jody. And Jody, I know, speaking for Camp Skink, we both hope to see you out there someday in a road trek. All right. So thank you, Jody, for that call. Jody left the voicemail question on the roadtrekking.com website. Click that little link over on the right-hand side of the screen. And we got, like I said, a whole bunch more. So we're going to take more questions and comments because you guys filled up those lines this past week. And I love to have other RVers out there be a part of the podcast. So let's listen to the next one.
Kilo 8 Zulu Romeo Hotel. This is November 7, Papa Uniform Golf, John in Salt Lake City. Hey, Mike, just wanted to congratulate you. Really enjoy listening to the podcast. You've done an excellent job with road trekking. And I want to suggest that you do an episode on amateur ham radio. For those in your audience that may not be familiar with it, I think they'd be surprised at the vastness of the hobby and how it's adapted to the internet age, and it may be interest to many of those people to go out and get their license. In any case, I don't own my RV yet. I do aspire to one of these days, but I do have a lot of experience in operating portable and mobile, and if you're looking for a guest host that day, I'd love to discuss ham radio with you. Take care. Again, fantastic job on Road Trekking 73.
Well, thank you, John. I have a couple of stories I have written on the roadtrekking.com website about my use of amateur radio. And I haven't put it back in the new RV we have yet. But amateur radio is a lot of fun. It's a great hobby. It's a great way to stay in touch. It's a terrific tool. And where I have really appreciated it is when I am far out boondocking someplace that does not have a cell service. It's just nice to know I have that as a backup. Plus, it's a lot of fun to keep in touch with others. There's a lot of RVers who are ham radio operators. In fact, in the Family Motor Coach Association, the FMCA, the largest association of motorhomes in the world, they have a chapter devoted just to ham radio operators. And if you go to roadtrekking.com and there's a little search button, you know, right on the right-hand side there, just type in ham radio or amateur radio, and you can read about some of the use there. So I may do something on it later on, John. I will be installing. I'm looking for some. There's two types of ham radio. There's this UHF stuff, which is like in ham lingo, it's 2 meters, and that's probably the most common one that most guys use, and that's, you know, line of sight communications. It's great for a region or an area, and they use repeaters. The one I like the best is called HF communications, which is high frequency and allows you to do long distance communications across around the world. And I'm looking for the right rig to put in my road trek. And I really need some help in putting up an antenna on the road trek that doesn't get it up too high, so it's not knocking off the, when I'm traveling down the road, because I'm already 9 feet tall. So I'm looking for that, and I've got to find somebody who's been doing that, and we'll hook it up. But that's my goal, to get that hooked up this year, and I'm sure we'll do more. So thank you for noticing that, John. Here's another call that came in, this one from Dale.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. I'm Dale Brandon. My wife and I enjoy both your YouTube videos and podcast, and we subscribe to both. We listen to the podcast in our TV room on the Roku streaming device. We added the private channel ITPC iTunes podcast. We appreciate all your helpful information and hope to get a road trek soon. We will be visiting Van City next week. Wishing you safe travels. Bye for now.
Well, when you get there, say hi to Dan the Van Man for me at Van City RV in St. Louis. You'll be hearing from him in just a couple minutes as one of our sponsors of the podcast. And I appreciate your call. That's great. Roku, it's a streaming service that allows you to watch all sorts of programs. They take many of our videos, even our road trekking RV videos. If you search under there, you'll find them. And you can listen to it in your entertainment system in your home. So thank you for reminding us that Roku is another way to listen to podcasts or to watch streaming video. Okay, we got a couple more that we still want to get. So here's a long question from somebody who has noticed that we got a new RV.
Mike, this is Tom Gallant calling from Central Wisconsin. I'm just getting started and interested in RVing, and have read your blog and your sites on Facebook and so forth, and am quite interested. Actually, I had come across the Road Trek RV about a year ago, and I've been kind of toying with it. I'm going to be retiring in about a year and a half, and thinking about maybe getting on the road and doing a similar thing to what you're doing, except for not doing the site. Anyway, I had a couple of questions. I noticed you've just taken delivery of an Adventurous CS, presumably a 2015. And I was kind of surprised at that, in that you had previously the E-Trek, which I thought was really something that I was thinking about getting, because the propane kind of made me a little nervous. I'm not real interested in lithium batteries because of the fire hazards, but just with a conventional battery bank and the solar and so forth, I was kind of wondering what triggered you to change. I noticed you're new on your quick tour of your new site. You have propane because you had a couple of propane burners in your kitchen and so forth. And I was wondering what prompted you to go back to propane. I noticed you went with the XL, which would be terrific as well. But that was primarily my thing. Could you kind of give a comparison of the two machines, the E-Trek, and as I understand it, your Adventurous CS has a lot of the E-Trek features, the solar power and so forth. And I was thought it would be great if you could contrast some of those. And then a separate issue, one of the things I've been going over some several different sites, but one of the things that kind of interested me was the composting toilet issue versus the black tank. And I was wondering if you had done any evaluation of that possibility. And why not? And, you know, the pluses and minuses of that issue. Anyway, thank you very much.
All right, Tom. Well, let's take the last one first, the composting toilet. You know, it's kind of a DIY, do-it-yourself project. And it's it's pretty messy, obviously. Composting toilets have been around for a long time. I don't think you're ever going to see them as a standard item in an RV, particularly a Class B RV. As I understand it, it's very difficult to handle the odor problem with them, despite the fact they say they don't have any odor. It's not going to happen. And I have absolutely no interest in putting one in ours. You could do a search on Google. You'll find lots of different folks who have tried it. The Winns, WYNNS, have done a story on their blog, Gone with the Winns, and they actually installed one. They have a large, much larger RV, but, you know, I don't know anybody who has really had good experiences with them, and I don't think they're going to ever be mainstream. You know, they're kind of be for those who really want to mess around. I have absolutely no problem with the black tank. It's the easiest way to empty it is, I think, with the Road Trek and its macerator. Amazingly simple and clean, and it does it very fast. And I just see no reason to change that. And that's the way they're made anyway. So if I did, I'm not going to put one in because I'm not that technical. And it just doesn't interest me. Now, as to the why we got the CS Adventurous XL and why we now have propane. Now, as you know, I love the E-Trek. The E-Trek we had, it actually was the very first E-Trek that Road Trek made.
And we got it in December 2012. We put 65,000 miles on it. And then we traded it in at, I think it's still there at American RV. We just traded it in there. I think they're selling it on their used lot. It's a great machine. Love the eTrek. However, everything evolves in the RV industry. And my job as a reporter here is to be up on top of what the latest is. So, and plus our traveling style has changed. When we first started, we tended to do, you know, maybe weekend trips and a little bit of boondocking. Now we're doing longer and longer off the grid boondocking times. We really are just absolutely love it. And we went to the CS for a couple of reasons. One, the one we have now, the CS Adventurous XL, is that extra length. It's got about 14 usable extra inches in the back. Doesn't sound like much, but it's an amazing amount. I don't have to have a cargo box anymore that I carry around my stuff. So I can load a lot of things in there. I'm thinking about getting a satellite system. It'll fit in there easily. All of our gear fits in there. I love that extra length. Now, the CS Adventurous comes with propane. It doesn't have the inductive stove option that the eTrek had. However, to tell you the truth, we prefer propane to cook with. I'm not the least concerned about any danger with propane. It is just fine. The reason we use propane is we have switched to a new type of pots and pans. I mentioned my Super Healthy Me podcast a little while ago. Well, part of our new lifestyle is to get rid of all of the junk that is out there in processed food and in some of the utensils that we use to prepare food, including pots and pans, which have, many of them have this no stick stuff on them, which is, if you really look into that, and this is just a personal stuff on our thing, I don't need to dig into it, but many of those have a lot of really weird chemicals, and we're trying to eat as cleanly as possible. So we have picked up some pots and pans called the green pans, which are ceramic pans, and they don't work on an inductive stove. So that's one thing that we've changed, and we love to cook with these green pans. And I like propane. I think Jennifer prefers it. It's easier to cook with natural gas. It's just more fun. And we're doing more and more cooking in their RV. So that's why we picked it up. Plus, all of the eTrek pioneering features that Road Trek introduced when they first came out with the eTrek 2 years ago have slowly been integrating their way into their entire lineup. In fact, they now have something called eTreknology, which makes pretty much every model they make an eTrek. It has all those features from solar to the onboard engine generator that replaces that ugly, noisy generator that made so much noise you had to go hundreds of yards away from anybody because it was loud. The engine generator is so much more efficient, and that is showing up on more and more models as well. So that's a quick take on it, but you ask about propane. Oh, you also mentioned lithium battery and worried about fire. Those issues have been changed with the way lithium batteries are made. Now, they still are not widely available in RVs. And yes, we do have some on ours, as does Camp Skunk on his, but we're serving as sort of test beds for what will, in a couple of years, probably make its way into the Road Trek lineup, and I'm sure other RVs as well. But I have no problem with lithium. They're just great, and they last so much longer, so much more power. And I'll be able to share a lot more about that as we get out there on the road in the full RV season that's about to come up. So I hope that helped you, Tom, with some of the questions. But eTreknology is now showing up everywhere, including on this new CS. Summing up the two big reasons, extra length, man, I just love that. Oh, the extra refrigerator, it's a 7 cubic foot refrigerator, so that can provide all of our needs for a couple of weeks. And then we really do like the propane. It's easier to cook with the cookware we have, and we like the ability to have that the control you get with cooking over a fire. So there you go. Hope that answered your question. All right. All right, I told you this was an extended Q&A. We've got one more we're going to take, and then we'll move on to some of the other segments in the regular editions of our programs here. But here's one more question that came in this week.
Yeah, we're reading on the dispersed camping in the National Forest, and we was wondering if there's a single place to go to read more on dispersed camping so that we know all the way across the United States.
Okay, dispersed camping or boondocking, off the grid. We've written about that. Actually, Camp Skunk has done and I'll put a link on the show notes. If you just go to roadtrekking.com/21, you'll find a link to Camp Skunk story about dispersed camping in national forests. And then there are some other places out there. There is a great service called forestcamping.com set up by the National Forest Campground, the U.S. National Forest Campground. And on that site, I really like that site, you can access research on 155 national forests and 20 national grasslands and some 2,383 developed campgrounds around, but also a lot of dispersed camping in information there. It was done by a couple who made this a labor of love, Fred and Susie Dow. And I hope we can get them on our program sometime because they have made it their visit to visit every single one of them. And so if you go to the website forestcamping.com, you can click on a link called National Forests and Campgrounds, and you can find it by state, and it lists every one that you can possibly find. And then the ability is you find the national forest that you want, and then you look there, and you should be able to find plenty of places to do dispersed camping, off-the-grid camping. Speaking of which, if you are interested in that, and I'm not talking about those who have to watch TV every night and need to be plugged in, we are going to hold an incredible event, but we have very limited space. It's going to be up very close to Yellowstone National Park in Montana in a national forest. We're going to do this in May, and I'll have some information on the website within a couple of weeks on the roadtrekking.com website. But it's going to be the first road trekking, boondocking photo safari. And it's we're going to have several really excellent photographers there. We're going to do some hikes. We're going to photograph wildlife. We're going to probably go into Yellowstone for a while. But even right where we're going to camp, the place we're going to camp is spectacular country. It's a great lake. It's up about 8,000 feet. It's a tough place to get to. You're going to go down some dirt roads, but you are off the grid. There's no water. There is no electricity. You got to carry what you want. But that's the kind of campground we like. And if you are interested in that, and you probably should have some experience with boondocking, just to sort of keep mid-June. I said May. It's actually in June, in early June. I think it's like the first week of June, first, second week of June. We'll give you the dates as soon as we line them up completely. But early June. This will be at this is our first boondocking photo safari up around Yellowstone. And I just loved that kind of camping. And I know a lot of other people do. So there you go. We appreciate all of those questions. And next week and the weeks after, you can also be featured on the Road Trekking RV podcast.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question, leave a comment. Look on the right side of Mike's RoadTrekking.com blog and click the Send Voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Sponsoring this part of the Road Trekking RV podcast is Van City RV, serving RV shoppers from the center of the country in St. Louis, Missouri. Van City RV is one of America's top dealers, specializing only in Class B motorhomes from the three major small motorhome manufacturers. They are in stock, on display, and Van City RV loves to deal. They only sell Class Bs. The owner, Ray Dwyer, is the dean of Class B sales. Nobody knows small motorhomes better than Ray and his crew. They not only stock new models, they have a large inventory of used Class Bs as well, and they have a great fly and drive program. Shoppers from all over the U.S. choose Van City RV. They fly into St. Louis, they get picked up at the airport, taken to Van City, and pick up their new unit. I've been to Van City RV. I've met Ray and Danny and the crew, and they have one of the top service centers in the country. They've worked on my road trek motorhome, and I can personally attest to their skill and expertise. Here's Dan, the van man, now with this week's information.
Hey, Mike. Dan the van man here. Just back from the RV show this weekend, demonstrating a new prototype Zion at the show. Had a great response on that. Had some great response on our e-truck. Hey, speaking of our e-truck, we just got in a 2015 210 Popular with some of the e-technology in it. We got the under-the-hood generator, the extra batteries, the solar panels on the roof, and the large inverter. Somebody that's looking for the e-technology in the Chevy chassis, give us a call, 1-800-467-3905, or check it out at vancityrv.com.
News.
Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, we got a couple stories for you. If you are an RVer who loves to visit Las Vegas, Nevada, Lost Wages, many of you have known about and stayed right on the strip at the Las Vegas KOA, right there. Well, they're moving. They're moving off the strip, and they're going to make their new home at Sam's Town Hotel and Gambling Hall. Now, that KOA campground, if you remember, it was right next to Circus Circus. It's been there for 35 years, and it's now been closed. They're going to actually build something there called the City of Rock, which is going to have open-air concerts. So the KOA campground's closed, but they've cut a deal with Boyd Gaming Corporation, which runs Sam's Town, and they're going to take over the operations of Sam's Town RV Park, which is one of the largest ones in the Las Vegas area. And they're going to rename the park the Las Vegas KOA at Sam's Town. And it will not be there this summer, but it will open on October 1st. So there you go. 500 spaces across two parks there. They'll offer 30 and 50 amp. But the KOA is moving off the strip. It's closed the strip one by Circus Circus. They're moving and taking over the RV park at Sam's Town, which will now be known as the KOA Las Vegas. So there you go. Way to go, KOA. I like KOAs. They give you a good, consistent place to stay. You know, they're always clean. And you always have the amenities you want. It's they do just a terrific job. If you're in Michigan, Michigan has some incredible campgrounds. Happens to be my home state, but it's also if it wasn't, I would come back here all the time. Like many other places, campers in Michigan can expect to pay more in campground fees this year, starting the 1st of January. Fees for public campgrounds in the state rose between $1 and $4. That's pretty hefty. Camp Skunks with an 82% higher average occupancy, in other words, the most popular ones, they're getting a $4 increase this year. The sites that, have moderate or lesser occupancy rates that are less popular, they're only going to get a $2 or a $1 increase. And the state makes no bones about it. They say they need the money, and they say that that's the first time they've had to raise it since 2007, and they got to do it to keep pace with inflation and operating expenses, and they think that this will end up taking in about $2.5 million in extra revenue for them. So there you go. So it's up. Will that have an effect? They say no. They say that early campground reservations through November are already up 10%. So maybe that's okay. And on a related note, at the far other end of the country in California, there was a report that came out. If you've seen California state parks, they are spectacular. From Las Vegas or Los Angeles, their beaches to the Redwoods and the Santa Cruz Mountains, great state parks. However, a report came out this week that said that the California state parks are under serious stress and suffering from declining budgets and shorter hours and higher fees and a $1.3 billion maintenance backlog, as well as outdated technology at those reports. It was issued just this past week. A Blue Ribbon State Commission made up of business leaders and government officials and park experts have been looking into the problems for some time. And they say it can be fixed, but they've got to find some new funding for the campgrounds and the state parks. They've got to rebuild public confidence after Jerry Brown, the governor, and then former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger threatened to close down dozens of parks to save money. Former Parks Director Ruth Coleman resigned after auditors found her staff had not reported millions of dollars that were sitting in accounts to state finance officials. So they've had a rough go of it out there. They're trying to rebuild trust and transparency, the state says. But meantime, the parks are under, quote, serious stress, and they're trying to come up with a new permanent funding source so they aren't relying on the ups and downs of the state general fund. And they're working on all sorts. They don't have an idea yet. They're working with, they said, six potential sources that are used in other states, like a vehicle license fee,
That's what they do in Montana. They have a $6 fee. A sales tax increase, that's what an eighth of an cent tax does to fund Arkansas parks. Maybe a hotel tax or some other fee. It's going to be always difficult to get new taxes, but they're trying to figure all of this out. So there you go. That's our news of the week. And it's sponsored this time by Good Sam and Camping World. Camping World, the most trusted name in RV sales, equipment, and accessories, introduces the Camping World mobile app. This is an all-in-one app. You can search for it on the Android Google Play site or under iTunes, the iTunes App Store. This is an all-in-one app that gives you quick and easy access that lets you shop thousands of RV, camping, and outdoor products as well as RVs for sale straight from your smartphone. You can conveniently locate the nearest Camping World Supercenter or any of their 100-plus stores nationwide and then receive directions on the phone from where you are right then to how to get there. And while you're shopping from your mobile device, you can view detailed product information and read customer-submitted product reviews. If you're in the market for a new rig, thousands of RVs for sale across the country are listed on that app. All the vehicle information, you can email, print, share it via social media. But don't forget about Good Sam, too. You can learn all about the Good Sam Club and roadside assistance and all their other RVing member services. And if you ever have any issues, you can get in touch with their customer support representatives quickly through the contact links and numbers provided in the app. So check it out, the Camping World app.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV tech tip of the week.
Well, I've got a couple of good ones. RVers, if nothing, like to eat out a lot, right? And RVers tend to get together a lot with other RVers. And it's always fun to share meals and all that stuff. But then comes the moment when they bring you the bill. What do you do? How do you divide it up? Well, I've got some apps that you need to put on your smartphone that will help you do that. And I have a link to all the information you want on the show notes, which is at roadtrekking.com/21. That's our show notes for this episode. But let me tell you about three of them that I like. The first one is called Tip and Split. And it is for the Apple iPhone. It perfectly describes what it does. It adds in the tip automatically and then it will divide it up between those who are at the table. It splits up that tip uniformly among everybody equally, and you can get the light version of this for free. There's a more expensive one that does more features, but the light will be cool. Now, that's for the iPhone, but there's a similar named app for Android on the Google Play Store. It's called the Tip and Split Calculator. Does sort of the same thing. So you can go check out the links that are on the show notes here at roadtrekking.com/21. Now, if here's the issue, and this is where it gets kind of tricky. What if you're splitting the bill and somebody ordered maybe some drinks and somebody else ordered a really expensive entree and somebody else ordered just an appetizer and that's it. And you want to do this, you want to divide up the bill, but some people have gotten way more expensive items than others. So that's where an app called the Biller, B-I-L-L-R, comes in handy. It's for the iPhone. There's not a version of it yet for the Android, but this splits the bill unevenly. In other words, say you got up even 16 people. What it does is it adds the tip, it takes into account the cost of every item ordered, and then it assigns them to one of the people and then gives each person their fair share amount. That's for the iPhone. But if you've got an Android or if you have an iPhone and you really want to try the ultimate bill splitter app, it's called Divvy, D-I-V-V-Y. Now, this is pretty cool. This makes sure everybody, like the other one, pays their fair share. Like the other apps, but it does so by having you take a photo of the bill. When the waiter brings you the bill, take a photo of it, and then take a photo of the people at your table. And the scanning, optical character recognition scanning feature in the Divvy app reads every item, and then you just drag that item to the photo of the person who ordered it. And it works pretty cool. Again, I'm sorry, that's only for the iPhone, the Divvy app. So you iPhone people get some good ones. If you're Android, the one that I suggest is Tip and Split Calculator. But Biller and Divvy are my favorites for the iPhone. cool apps that you may want to put in your traveling tech notebook there for your smartphone or your tablets. This part of the podcast is brought to you by Verizon Wireless, the nation's largest and most reliable 4G LTE network. And speaking of smartphones, have you seen the new one that has just come out? I mean, they're saying this is the next big thing. And it's Android-based. It is really cool. I'm talking about the Samsung Galaxy Note Edge. It is probably going to revolutionize the way consumers access information and interact with their devices. It's a big screen, kind of like the Apple 6 Plus, but this thing is really cool. It's a curved screen. It's for you geeks out there. It's quad HD Super AMOLED display. And it wraps to create sort of a side screen, which allows viewers to easily access their favorite apps. They can control music and view alerts. And it's the screen's big enough that that's over on the right-hand side, so you don't have a notification interrupt what you have on the main display. Very cool feature. So you can go check that out. Your local Verizon retailer today has it. And the Samsung Galaxy Note Edge, try it out. Just mess around with it and learn how you can take advantage of Verizon's best ever pricing. For a limited time, individuals and families who switch to Verizon can get a $150 bill credit with each new Verizon Edge smartphone activation. That's a pretty good deal. So in the time you join the nation's largest and most reliable 4G LTE network, you can visit roadtrekking.com/VZW for stories about how technology can enhance your life.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion
you probably won't find in a guidebook.
Here's Mike.
All right, time for our Off the Beaten Path reports, and we love to get these in. You can send yours in to us, and the neat thing about it is if we use it on the air, we will send you a cool road trekking report. So here's the Off the Beaten Path adventure phoned in by a listener named Linda.
This is Linda Siegel with your Lucky Rover. My husband Jim and I took an Off the Beaten Path trip that I'd like to share. We were in Louisiana, driving back home from a cross-country trip, when the fuel tank in our 1998 Newmar Dutch Star diesel pusher told us we should refuel soon. A billboard announced that diesel was several cents cheaper in Louisiana at an upcoming Chevron station than it would be in Mississippi, so we decided to pull off and fill up. The station has several diesel pumps for trucks on its far side, but by the time Jim had seen them, he had already driven past the entryway. He said he would turn around up ahead. Usually he could find a place to make a U-turn, not this time. The road was asphalt for about another 100 feet or so, then it turned into gravel. We kept following it until it turned into a Y and climbed a rise. Jim took the left turn, thinking there would be a turnaround place somewhere up ahead. As the road narrowed, we finally realized we were on top of a levee. Our GPS, which we affectionately call Darmina, actually knew about this road. Sort of. She told us it went straight for a couple of miles, then it turned back. So we kept going and going and going until we came to the interstate. Of course, we couldn't get on to the interstate. This was a levee road. We had to go under it. But the question was, could we? Our motorhome was almost 12 feet tall. It would be a tight fit to drive under the interstate, and there was no guarantee we would find any real road to get us back once we were on the other side of it. As we were considering our options, a Louisiana law enforcement officer came down the levee road. We explained our dilemma. He said if we could make it under the overpass, he would lead us to the main highway. The police officer turned his truck around. I stood on the embankment of the overpass, and Jim got in to drive the motorhome. I watched as he inched the motorhome forward. Literally, inch by inch. Using my cell phone, I told him to keep going. The motorhome made it by inches. The police officer led us along the levee for another mile or so and finally into a small neighborhood where kids were playing in the yards and families were standing outside. Everyone stopped to watch us go down their street. It was as if they had never seen a motorhome come from that direction before. It turns out they hadn't. When we got to the main highway, our police officer guide stopped his truck and came back to tell us goodbye. As we thanked him for his help, he said, "In all the years I've worked the levee, I've never had an RV up there before." I guess there's always a first for everything, but frankly, that was one first this reluctant rover would prefer to have missed.
Well, thank you, Linda. Appreciate that. Really appreciate that report. That was fun to listen to. And we've all had kind of adventures like that over the years, haven't we? I would love to hear your adventures. Maybe the strangest thing that ever happened to you. Maybe the coolest place that you've ever found. You can do that by just sending us an off-the-beaten-path report. And you do that by clicking that little leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. It's on the right-hand side. Just start it off by saying, "Hey, I'm Linda, and this is my off-the-beaten-path Beaten Path Report," and tell us it. And if we use yours, we'll send you a free road trekking hat.
What's on your RV bucket list? Maybe the place Mike has for you now on this week's Road Trekking Destination of the Week.
Well, I want to take you to the Mississippi River, America's River, it's called, and flows 2,300 miles from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico. And if you're heading anywhere out west, you're going to cross it eventually. I mean, you know, you've seen the river. It's big and it's busy and there are barges and river boats and pleasure craft. And a great little bicycle path. If you want to visit a place, and this is a way many of you go as you head out across the continent, Rock Island, Illinois, near the Quad Cities of Illinois, Mississippi, or Illinois and Iowa, Quad City area. There's a bicycle path there on the eastern banks of the Mississippi. We just had a great time. We did what we called day camping, just hanging out on the river. We were on our way west, but we just thought, let's get close to this river and have some fun. So that's what we did. And the first place we went was a really cool little place called the Mississippi River Visitor Center. There you go. It's not far from the Rock Island Arsenal. And there's a little causeway you take as you move that way. And this is a beautiful place. The Mississippi River Visitor Center is built on one of the step locks along the river to keep the barges moving. We just had a ball there. And then right next to it is the Rock Island National Arsenal. And it's a big military weapons base, and you can check that out. And then the Rock Island National Cemetery. And there's so many of these national cemeteries around the country, and we stopped there and spent some time, and we're just overwhelmed with this place. It began in 1863. It was a place to bury Union soldiers who died while serving as guards at the large Confederate prison camp that was set up on Rock Island by the U.S. government. But there were many more deaths on the other side. Almost 2,000 Confederate prisoners died on Rock Island during that horrible Civil War. You can only imagine the harshness of the prison. The first Confederate POWs captured the battles of Lookout Mountain and Missionary Ridge in Tennessee, came to this area in December. It was very cold. Throughout the war, Confederates were brought to Rock Island from the battle areas. Eventually, more than 12,000 POWs were confined there on Rock Island. Prisoners died from all sorts of stuff: exposure to the cold, harsh winters, malnutrition, smallpox. But in the years since, the cemetery has become the resting place of soldiers who served in the Civil War, as well as the Mexican War, Indian Wars. There are 29,000 graves there. It's very somber, but you know, that's part of our history. So check it out. The Quad Cities area, Illinois, Iowa, are also the world headquarters of the John Deere tractor people. You got to visit that. That's pretty cool. There's a big pavilion that dominates downtown Rock Island. With some of the displays of the tractors and the combines the company makes. And there's a big John Deere clothing store there. So it's pretty cool. But I have to tell you that what we did, we just kind of hung out and visited all these places around Rock Island, Illinois there on the eastern edge of the Mississippi. And then we just drove along the Mississippi, and there are all sorts of great picnic places. So we just hung out at once, made dinner. Fired up the microwave and cooked up some food and just hung out there till sundown.
And then we continued our drive along. So there you go. I'll put a link up to a story we did some time ago on the blog about how America's River makes a great picnic spot, and it kind of has links to all of those places I just mentioned. But as you're heading west, get off near the Quad Cities just before you get into Iowa, from Illinois to Iowa. I think that's Highway 80 there, and then Interstate 80, and then make your way to Rock Island and along the eastern Mississippi, and you'll have a ball. Hey, I had a book I read, been looking at this week, that's really pretty cool. It's called Dog Tripping. And it was very interesting to read this book. It's a story of a writer who took off on an RV trip across the country with his dogs, and he just had a ball, and he wrote about it. Now, why I'm bringing this all up is I want to talk to you about audiobooks a little bit, and a great offer I have from a new, relatively new sponsor of the podcast called Audible. And Audible, you know, is the place where you get your great books, ebooks, or not ebooks, audiobooks. And that's a secret for Jennifer and I. As we travel, we are almost always listening to an audiobook. It makes the time go by. We try and pick out books that are related to where we're going, although sometimes we'll intersperse those with the thriller. We just finished one of John Grisham's books. Actually, we did two of his audiobooks back to back on a trip we just took down and back to Florida. But we're always listening. And there's a new one that I just really thought was pretty cool. I want to pass along to you. It's called Dog Tripping. And it's a very interesting story about a best-selling mystery writer named David Rosenfeld and his family. When they moved from Southern California to Maine, he thought he had prepared for everything. They had a route set up. They had three GPSs and refrigerators full of food and stoves and microphones, and they were traveling, ready with this, with 25 dogs across the country. These are all dogs they have rescued. And despite the RV and the extra kibble and volunteers and camping equipment, they had adventure after adventure of moving his annual animal companions across the United States. It's a fun book. It's an audio book that you can just listen to, and you can have all sorts of fun checking that out. That's a book I would recommend that you listen to. Now, any book that you want is pretty cool. Audible.com gives you, and we have a special setup with them now, because they're kind of a sponsor and we have an affiliate arrangement with them. And here's what they offer. They will give you a free audiobook download, and you get a 30-day free trial from them at, here's the address, and I will put a link on show notes, but it's audibletrial.com/roadtrekking. audibletrial.com, audible trial is all one word, audibletrial.com/roadtrekking. And they have 150 titles that you can choose from, and you can put them on your iPhone, your Android, your Kindle, your MP3 player. And for listeners of the Road Trekking podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, and you may want to start off with that one I just told you called Dog Tripping, just go to the this following address again, audibletrial.com/roadtrekking, audibletrial.com/roadtrekking, and you can go through there, pick out a free audiobook. So if you use that link, you are going to find it. So there we go. We've got so much information, and now it is time for our featured interview. I told everybody before that what we were going to do is spend some time sharing the news about other podcasts that are out there, podcasts from many other RVers who are doing the same thing that Jennifer and I do as we travel around the country. And I thought that this is a great way for us to sort of start it. We introduced you to a great couple last week who are a young couple that are full-time and now and traveling the country after quitting their jobs, and they're sort of work camping their way across the country. This week, I want to introduce you to a guy who is well-known in the RV industry. He is an RV business reporter. He covers the industry for RV Daily Report, and his name is Greg Gerber. And Greg has, as you'll hear in this interview, traveled all over the place in the last year. But up until then, he didn't have an RV. He was just covering the industry and, covering it very well, flying here and there. But he decided that he needed to get out there and see what it's like. And so, like I did, he started a podcast. He's built a little studio like we did in his RV. And he now travels about the country, covering the industry still, but he is now also an RV consumer. So I thought it would be great to have Greg on the program. He had me on his podcast last week, and I'm returning the kindness of his and putting him on ours this week. I know you want to meet Greg, and you'll want to add his podcast to the ones you listen to as well, so you can stay up to date on what's happening. So without any further ado, let's meet Greg Gerber. Greg Gerber, we welcome you to the podcast. Tell us where you are today.
I am in sunny Fort Myers, Florida.
You had it wrong. I was afraid it would be something like that.
It's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, the temperature is about 72 degrees right now, gentle breeze, a couple of clouds in the sky, but not much.
We're on our way up to do a big camp out up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan where there's 32 inches on the ground. So
there's something wrong with that kind of behavior in the winter, Mike.
I think it will make me appreciate so much more coming south in a few weeks. So,
absolutely.
Well, Greg, as we said in the introduction, you are probably the best connected guy in the RV industry when it comes to keeping track of what's happening and the trends. Before I get into the big changes that you've seen that way, one of the big changes is up until recently, you were desk bound or not certainly on the road a lot. And that has changed, has it not?
It sure has. Well, I've been covering the industry since January 2000, first as the magazine editor for RV Trade Digest, then a magazine editor for RV Industry News. And when those publications folded, I decided to venture out on my own and start RV Daily Report. But I've always been publishing the daily newsletter from a desk, looking at a wall, and using my computer. And I've got three daughters, and I got the last one married off last year and decided this is the time to hit the road. So I bought a motorhome and headed out from Phoenix on Easter weekend last year just to see how it would be. I wanted to interview people on the road and check out the lifestyle. What an eye-opening experience. I realized, like you, that I could work anywhere. I had electricity and an internet connection. And why was I sitting there staring at four walls?
That's a lot of people are hearing that and they're nodding in agreement as they listen to this. What was the biggest perceptual change that Greg Gerber had from covering the industry as a trade journalist to suddenly covering the industry as an RVer?
Well, when I hear things about products now, it makes a lot more sense to me. For example, we would cover the towing experience and people or companies that produce products to help in that to prevent porpoising. And so we would always record or put in our articles that this helps prevent porpoising. But until you experience it while towing a Jeep behind a motorhome, going up and down the road white-knuckled, you really don't have any idea what porpoising is. And that has helped me appreciate the need for some of these products.
Now, you are in a Type A motorhome, is that right?
Mm-hmm. 35-foot, 2003 Winnebago Adventurer.
And I see that you had traveled with a puppy after a while. I listened to your podcast, and I heard all about the puppy chewing up all of the wiring and everything. He's gone, huh?
The puppy is now a Wisconsin resident. He is living with daughter number two.
So you have experienced the other commonality among RVers is that almost all of them travel with pets, some of them multiple pets.
Multiple, right.
Now, I'll come back to some of your experiences in a bit, but tell us how you got involved in covering the recreation vehicle industry and what it was like back in 2000 when you started.
Well, I simply answered a help wanted ad in the Wisconsin State Journal. The company was looking for a editor for a recreation vehicle publication, business to business. And they had clip art inside that ad that had snowmobiles and boats and RVs and motorcycles and just about all those other kinds of things. So I thought, cool, I'm going to apply to be an editor for this multifaceted recreation publication. And then when I got into the interview, I found out it was RVs and travel trailers, motorhomes, and that's it. and it was pretty cool. They didn't want to hire me at first because I only had weekly newspaper experience and never had any experience on a magazine. But after I went to an RV show after the interview, interviewed dealers, found out what the critical issues were in the RV industry at the time, and then submitted an editorial plan for the next 6 months to the publication, they hired me right away. So that was kind of neat.
That's I have a confession that's similar. When you were saying that, I'm sitting there remembering, I'm a native of Bay City, Michigan. And when I was first starting out as a journalist, you know, they didn't pay any of us any money. And I was looking for an opportunity to freelance. And I saw an ad for a publication called Snowmobile Times. Mm-hmm. I think it was published someplace over your way in Wisconsin when you were there. So I applied to be one of their correspondents, and they hired me sight unseen. I had never in my life ridden a snowmobile and continued to freelance for them doing columns for about 2 years. And I still had never been on a snowmobile. So I guess being a journalist and being able to tell stories is kind of a, it doesn't make any difference what the industry is, but you ended up with a strong affection for this industry. And I wonder, and that shows through in your podcast, it shows through in all of the reports that you do for RV Daily Report. What is it about the RV industry that that makes it so special to Greg Gerber?
Well, to me, it's the freedom that it allows. I can get into my motorhome and travel anywhere. So I can go off and attend a trade show. I can go to a certain part of the country that I've always wanted to visit and then find people to interview when I'm there. So that freedom is really important. But more importantly, I think it's the sense of community that I'm seeing here. It's the last bastion of a traditional American neighborhood is what you're finding in the RV parks. The one I'm in right now, I can walk down the street and I'll probably have six or seven people wave at me, or they're sitting out in their patios and they'll start talking to me as I'm walking around. It's just a really great community. And in some of the parks where you see kids there, the parents just let them play the way you and I grew up, you know, where mom and dad said, all right, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, shut off the TV, get outside, don't come back until it's dark. Go make friends, go find something to do. And you're seeing that here at the parks as well.
I like that. The last vestige of community. I think that's a really good description. Describe your travels over the past year and a typical week. Now, you're in Fort Myers, Florida, and I have a feeling you're going to probably stay in the sunny south of Florida for a few days.
For a few days, right. I'll be here until Sunday, and then I travel across the state to Daytona Beach, and I'll spend all of next week there. And then the following week, I'm at the Lazy Days Campground in Tampa for a rally of full-time families. And as soon as that's done, I have to bolt it all the way across the country to Arizona because I have been summoned for jury duty. And they've excused me twice, but they're not inclined to do it a third time.
Now, that's pretty funny. I never thought of that. For those who are full-time on the road and you have residency in a state that you vote in, that you could get nailed for jury duty. They don't understand the fact that, hey, I'm across the country and this is my job, and they still right. are bringing you back.
Well, they dismissed it twice. I'd been in the state for about 5 years and never got summoned. And as soon as I hopped in my motorhome, I don't think I was in Texas. So about 3 weeks into the deal, I get the first summons. And I'm like, what? Come on.
That's a great story. Let's talk industry for a minute. What are you seeing in the industry? Of course, the great recession of 27, 28 is over. Everybody's booming again. There's optimism. I don't know. I know you were down at Tampa last week. I was up at a show in Grand Rapids, and man, everybody's talking record crowds. What's the state of the RV industry now, and what trends are you seeing, Greg Gerber?
I think it is very, very healthy. The shows that I've been at and those that I've had reports from are all talking about record crowds, record sales. And I think what we're seeing here is pent-up demand, because when that recession hit, the dreams didn't die. The money kind of dwindled away and became a little tighter. So people kept putting off their purchase and putting off their purchase and putting off their purchase. And then they woke up last year and they said, look, our kids aren't getting any younger. If we're going to go RVing, we got to do it now before they get too old to go with us. And people who had been retired and wanted to do like you and I do, travel around the country and see this great country, they kept putting it off as well. And they said, look, we're not getting any younger. we don't want to be 80 years old and miss out on this opportunity. So I think they finally decided that to heck with it, we are just going to get into it, buy an RV, and go out and live our dream.
It's also not hurting, is it, that we're seeing gas prices below $2 a gallon, even diesel prices below $3. This is pretty exciting.
I just posted a story a few minutes ago before I came on your show that talked about how gas prices are cheaper than sparkling water. and it's true. And we posted a picture that I had taken a couple of weeks ago where gas was $1.87 at the gas station I was at.
Yeah, it's pretty. And hopefully that will continue. Although I read something that the RVI puts out that says, you know, it has to get up over $4 a gallon before most RVers say, well, I'm not going to do that trip. I'm going to be more cautious. I guess once you've invested that much money in a rig that, you know, you're going to use it. But
even that is a misnomer. People, that's a common misperception and keeps people away from the RV industry is, oh, my goodness, gas prices are up a dollar. Okay, let's look at that. You could take a 1,000-mile trip and you get 5 miles per gallon. Okay, how many gallons of gas is that? 50. Are you saying 50 extra dollars is going to keep you from your dream? When people realize that, then I think the whole gas price issue really is moot.
I do this with my wife all the time, even with our personal vehicle. She'll be we'll pass a gas station and it's a 192. And she says, 192? I saw 187 a couple of miles back. And she won't let me get it. I said, Jennifer, that's 4 cents a gallon. You got a little car. It's going to be 40 cents. You're going to turn around and drive two more miles back for 40 cents. And
right. Yeah, exactly.
It's all psychological. All right. So the industry is incredibly healthy. What are you seeing in terms of motorhomes, particularly B, C, and A, and those strange things they call B pluses, which are really C's, I guess. But they seem to be selling even at towable rates these days.
I think the entire industry was caught by surprise in the number of motorhomes that have been sold over the last couple of years. And I really don't know what to make of it myself, because it has been almost the entire time I've been in the industry, 85% of the RVs sold have been towables. But I think motorhomes are really coming on strong. And I guess, you know, the best advice I ever got when I was considering making this purchase is, if you're going to motor more than you're at home, you need a motorhome. But if you're going to be at home more than you motor, then you'd get a fifth wheel. Or a Class B like you have.
You know, I have stolen, I heard that, I think on one of your podcasts when you interviewed John and Kathy Huggins a couple That's of weeks correct. Ago. And I have used that after hearing that, I bet a dozen times in the last week or so as we met people at shows or answering email. And that really is so true. If you're going to motor more than you home, get a motor home. If you're going to home more than you motor, then get a fifth wheel or a towable. Excellent stuff. All right, here's some lightning round questions for you. What apps are on your smartphone? What do you use as you travel these days, as you make those rounds everywhere? Favorite apps?
Favorite apps? Gas Buddy would be one of them. And I also use the KOA app frequently to see where I could go and stay. Google Maps is essential for me. And after that, I have another device. I'd have to look up what it's called, but open source. And so when I get to a campground, I can see where the closest cell phone towers are, and I can point a special antenna at that and improve my internet connection.
See, that's why I asked this question, because every time we talk to somebody here, I'm a tech guy. I'm known as being PC Mike for NBC. I've not heard of open source, so I'm adding that to mine right away. How do you do connectivity as you travel? Because like me and other people who work from the road, you know, we can only do that if we have access to our business world, and we do that through the internet. How do you do it?
That has been the biggest challenge that I faced since I started this whole trip. And when I first got involved and hit the road, I was using a service offered by Millennicom, and they were a Verizon reseller, and they offered 20 gigabytes of data for $90, and it was a great deal. But Verizon took them over late last year, like October, and shut it down, and so it left all of us scrambling. Fortunately, Verizon came up with a double data promotion there for a couple of weeks, and so I was able to get up to 40 gigabytes of data now. But the problem, Mike, and you'll appreciate this maybe, is it happened here in Florida last week. First day at the Tampa Super Show, I went out to dinner with some friends, and I came back, and I realized, I looked on my app for Verizon and saw that I had used 23 gigabytes of data. And it's like, how could that happen? And what's worse, it was the second day of my billing cycle. So I'd already used 23 of the 40 gigabytes of data available to me because some program downloaded a huge update, probably a Windows program or something like that. So I'm constantly tweaking settings to prevent that kind of thing from happening.
Yeah, that's a very good piece of advice because a lot of us have automatic update for our laptops, whether we're Macs or PCs, and they will do that as soon as an update is available, and those can be huge. The other thing that I wonder if you're noticing is I never used campground Wi-Fi just simply because it's so congested now. Everybody's on it. But I'm noticing that on the data cards, that there's so many people who have data cards that it is actually slowing those cell connections down. Are you seeing that in the campgrounds that you're around now? When you log on, you see everybody's using a data card as well?
I first experienced that at the show in Tampa. Because when I got there, it was on Sunday, so the show opened on Wednesday. So Sunday and Monday, I had pretty good connection, Tuesday as well. But when that show opened, everything seemed to slow down. So I'd agree with you a lot on that. The campground I'm at now is very unique in that they are offering wired internet connections. So they hand you a modem when you check in, and you have to hook it up to the cable connection on the pedestal, and then hook it up to a Wi-Fi box, and I just couldn't get it configured. Fortunately, there are a couple of campers here who aren't very internet savvy, and they have open connections. So when I'm not on the Verizon connection,
zap into theirs
and not use my data.
Greg Gerber, master hacker. There you go. Exactly. I like that. Now, as you have covered the industry as a journalist, and now as an RVer, pretty much a full-time RVer, what are the biggest problems you're finding out there? What are the disappointments or the areas that you were unaware behind a desk that RVers need to find some improvement on?
Well, I've been surprised first by the campground connectivity and the internet because everybody says they offer Wi-Fi, but it's not really the case. The second one is the amount of time I'm spending getting the RV fixed. Something, you know, as you're going down the road at hurricane wind speeds and with a little earthquake under there, things are always breaking. And so there's always a list of something that needs to be fixed. And that kind of surprised me a bit because I figured, you know, once or twice a year we'd have to take it into a dealership. But hardly a month goes by where we aren't having somebody take a peek at something.
I think that's probably typical of most of them. These are pretty complicated machines. And as you say, it's always bumping around. The quality of RV dealerships. Now, I'm assuming that a lot of them don't know who Greg Gerber is when you pull in there. Are you finding a wide variety of quality in dealerships or difficulty getting service? We hear many people say, for example, that unless you buy from that dealer, they'll tell you it's a 2-week late delay to even get an appointment. How's that worked out for you?
Yep. I'm finding the same thing. I do not identify myself when I call up the dealerships. I just simply ask for the service department and explain what the problem is and ask if I can get in there and get it done. And they tell me they're 6 weeks out or whatever the case might be. That is very frustrating.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, I think the mobile service technicians are going to have a field day here in the next couple of years because the dealers are at capacity. They really can't take on any more service work. They don't have enough technicians to be able to expand. And that, I think, is going to become a problem for our industry.
I think I agree with you. That drives me absolutely nuts. Although at times we broke down in Glacier National Park last summer, and I had to somehow get myself to Missoula, Montana, got there, figured the same thing. It was a weekend. And they surprised me. They gave me a brand new Mercedes to use as a demo while they kept our unit in over the weekend in a couple of days. So
I guess, that's nice.
Yeah, that worked out very well. But then I've heard from so many people who go there. I've thought often of starting a list of dealers that with reviews that people could give good, honest reviews on RV dealers to sort of shed some light on it. But I think you identified it. It's not so much the dealership policy, it's they don't have enough help and the business is so booming.
That could be, but I've also experienced problems in getting my RVs serviced. When we had to have the tow lights attached to my Jeep, the dealer who installed it hardwired the wire into the engine, which meant that the wire could never be replaced, and it's just strung up inside the interior of my Jeep, which is very inconvenient for people who want to get in. They have to crawl around and over that big wire. That's kind of weird. I guess there are other ways that it could have been done. But the most egregious problem I had was in November, right before the National RV Trade Show in Louisville. I was up in Illinois visiting my daughters, watching the temperature, because it was already 20 degrees, and Winnebago has advised that I shouldn't use the RV at temperatures below 20 degrees. And I thought I would go into a dealer and get some service work done and get one of these extend stays added. So I called up the nearest dealer, which was about 45 minutes, 50 minutes away. They couldn't tell me whether they could fix it until they saw the RV. So I drove up in a snowstorm, slid through my first intersection with my motorhome. That was loads of fun. Get to the dealership, they look it over and instantly say, we don't have the parts. It's going to be a week to 10 days before we can get to them. Oh, well, I just wanted to go up and visit my daughters for Thanksgiving up in Wisconsin. So I asked if I could park the RV at the dealership lot. And they said, yeah, absolutely. And I asked, could I plug it in? Well, they didn't have any outlets. But the service manager assured me that it would be okay with the furnace running. So we filled up the propane, and I left it parked in their lot with the furnace running. Well, what else does a furnace need? It needs electricity. And the temperature up to 15 degrees, 12 degrees, and that thing was going all the time. And when I got back 4 days later, the entire unit was frozen solid. Even the stuff inside the refrigerator was frozen.
Wow.
And yeah, I lucked out because, you know, a tank could have cracked or something like that. We only had to replace a couple of faucets and the water filter.
This is the life on the road. I mean, the reality of it is the weather. Yeah, I have the same problem. We have a much smaller unit, but I go back and forth from climates all the time. And in fact, I just was down in Florida, and we never even bothered to unwinterize. You just use antifreeze for the, you know, to flush with the toilet and your own water. But on a big unit like that, that becomes a real issue trying to use it when it's, you know, going from one climate to another.
And it happens so quickly that it can catch you off guard. I mean, when I was in Knoxville, Tennessee, I was looking at the temperatures and they were expected to go into the low teens, and I would have had to drive 8 hours away to avoid that. So I just hunkered down and hoped for the best.
And so far she's running. Do you have a name for your Class A RV there?
He's called Nelson, in honor of the original owners, Bob and Georgia Nelson.
Oh, that's great. Now, did you buy from friends, or did you buy it from a dealership, or how did you buy? It's maybe some advice on buying a used one.
Sure. I am an illegal resident of Sun City, Arizona, in that you have to be 55 or older to live there. And I've been living there since I've been 49. And they have a RV lot there with a bulletin board outside that people can post items for sale. And I kept watching that bulletin board, and then this Winnebago came up. It was available. I called the owners and had them come down and show it to me. They agreed to take it to one of my favorite RV dealers, and they did an inspection on it to make sure that it was okay. And so that's how we found it. It was a private transaction.
And that is how everybody should handle one of these. And that takes me to my last question for you. And people, from your experience, both as the industry expert and also now as a full-timer, what's your advice when people want to buy, used or new? And what determines which way to go?
That's a very, very good question. If you want the best features and the most up-to-date technology, a new unit would be good. But be prepared to spend some time in the service departments while they're working out some of the warranty problems. I think my RV is 13 years old, and I mentioned before that I've had service issues that surprised me. But when I consider how far I've traveled and the amount of time that I've used this thing and I've really pushed it to its limits, it really hasn't provided that much problem, I guess, accordingly. So a used unit saves you a little bit of money, all that depreciation, etc. But a new unit, Also, there's something about that to be the first person to live in it, first person to flush the tanks, and all that other kind of stuff. So it depends upon your personal or the buyer's personal preferences.
Good advice. You know, we didn't ask you about your podcast. You started doing a podcast a little bit before we started to do it. Tell me how you like doing podcasts.
I love it because one of the problems I had with the magazines is that we kept having to cut content. And I'd go to the publishers and I'd say, hey, look, we've got so much content that we can't put in the magazine because we didn't sell enough ads to have the size of an issue that we had wanted to. How about we develop some sort of online thing that we can push the content out online so that people can go there and read the whole story or read more news? They told me, no. We are a magazine publishing company and we don't do the internet. Well, now they're bankrupt. But the problem with the internet publishing is that I just stayed at home and always did all of my stuff by email. And I missed the opportunity to get out and actually talk to business owners about what they're doing that makes them successful, where they're seeing the market go, and all that kind of thing. And getting in the RV has allowed me to travel, I think, 23 states last year I went to, interviewing dealers, manufacturers, suppliers, campground owners, even a couple of RV owners. And the one problem I'm having is with, as an online journalist, is I don't have the time to do these big, nice stories that we used to do. And people really don't want to take the time to read a 3,500 word article online. So the podcast came up as a wonderful alternative that allows people to tell their story in their own words in an unedited version. And people can listen to it while they're at work, driving to or from work, out exercising or walking the dog. It's just far more convenient. So I'm really liking it.
Well, I'll put a link with the show notes of this episode to Greg's podcast, as well as RV Daily Report. And yeah, you are one of the four or five that I listen to every single week. And I always learn something from you. But I like this interview better because I walk away with a brand new app I can use called Open Source. Greg Gerbert, thank you so much for your time. And I can't wait to actually have us cross paths out there on the road instead of through cyberspace.
Thanks, Mike. I do need to make one correction. I looked finally on my cell phone and the app in question is Open Signal, not Open Source.
Oh, great. Open Signal. I'll put a link up for everybody so you can find that and it will be with show notes. Greg Gerbert, thank you so much.
Thank you.
North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
There is so much to talk about in so little time. This is one of the longest ones we've ever done. Thank you, Greg Gerber, for that fine interview and appreciate your insight as we look at some of the big problems that RVers face, and yet it's still well worth it, isn't it, to be out there? We have had a great time. This is another edition of Road Trekking the RV Podcast. You can find complete show notes at roadtrekking.com/21. Our sponsors have been Van City RV, where they only sell Class B motorhomes, Camping World, the Good Sam Club, Good Friends, Good Fun, Great Savings, Audible.com, where you can get a free audio download, and Verizon Wireless, the nation's largest 4G LTE network. Remember, if you would like to have your voice heard and be a part of the podcast, you can record a voicemail message by clicking on the right-hand button of roadtrekking.com, our website. Please follow us also on Facebook at facebook.com/roadtrekking. If you're on Twitter, you can follow me at Road Trekking. I ask you if you'd do me a huge favor and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. And what that does is every time a new episode is introduced, you get it automatically put on your smartphone ready to listen, all queued up and ready to go. That really helps. Also, if you are an iTunes user, would you do us a huge favor and leave a review? You can rate the show and then leave an honest review of what you think about it. And hopefully it's all good stuff. I read every one of those and I appreciate them so much. Those reviews are really important because we're still a relatively new podcast. And although we have been doing incredibly well in terms of downloads, it's important for a new show to have a lot of those reviews for it to stay prominently accessible on iTunes. So I would, I really would appreciate it if you would give us a review. And at the end of the show notes for this episode, roadtrekking.com/21, at the very bottom of that, we have just exactly how you leave a rating and a review. And I just thank you for that. So I'm begging for your reviews because they really do help us a lot. Well, we have, we're going to continue along with our profiles next week of other interesting podcasters who are RVers, and you'll meet John and Kathy Huggins, who are Living the RV Dream. That's the name of their podcast, and they are just a delightful couple who I think you'll enjoy meeting very much as you get to share with them. As we continue with Greg talking about some of the problems with RV service, with the Huggins next week, we're going to talk about what you should look for when you buy. And again, coming back to that issue, should you buy new or used? What questions you need to ask and what you need to know about service? So all that's coming. Hey, thank you for being with us, especially thank you for putting me in your ear. See you next week.